Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of the Trade Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, and as usual, I'm joined by Seth Winchow. How are you, Seth?
Good. I'm in San Jose today.
Yeah, coming us live from California. Lucky you. Okay, this week we're going to talk about a bunch of interesting stuff, especially concerning the Model S and X refresh. We had a big scoop this week. We're going to get into that. Then we're going to give you a little bit of a preview of what we think we can expect for the Tesla autonomy event that's coming up on Monday. And we're going to end the show with a bunch of new EVs that were unveiled at both the Shanghai Auto Show and the New York Auto Show. But first off, a quick word from our sponsor, Dandelion. Set.
Hey, yes, Dandelion is again sponsoring our podcast. If you listen to recent episodes, you already familiar with this week's sponsor. The company originally started in Google X's lab, but it's now a leading home geothermal company in New York, and they recently announced a big new partnership with Con Ed. So a little bit of the background, Dandelion uses cutting-edge geothermal technology to pull heat from the earth safely and reliably to heat your home, and that's, of course, without relying on expensive, outdated, and dangerous heating fuels that also emit a lot of carbon. But perhaps most importantly, it's a system that makes it affordable for residential and home geothermal system, and it's cost competitive with that carbon-emitting fuel. The company is currently servicing customers in New York, but continuing to expand, and just announced a brand new deal with Con Ed. We talked a little bit about it last week, but you get, basically, if you live in Westchester County, you get $5,000 back from Con Ed because Con Ed is no longer running natural gas or any other kind of fossil fuel lines. So they have an exclusive partnership with Con Ed. If you're in Westchester County, go to, or anywhere in New York, but particularly Westchester County, go to dandelionenergy.com/electric and save a ton of money and be a lot greener. Earth Day's coming up.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks again for Dandelion for sponsoring the podcast. Model S and X refresh. Okay, we've been talking about that for a long time. It's been a long time coming, and things have emphasized ever since the last quarter result, where we've seen Model S and X sales just plummet completely to a low that we haven't seen for a long time. And we attributed that mostly to attributed to the Supercharger V3 unveiling. When Tesla unveiled the Supercharger V3, they focused only on the Model 3 compatibility, and they didn't say much about Model S and X taking advantage of the new, more powerful Supercharger V3, which can go up to 250 kilowatts of charge rate for Model 3. And that's just a big deal. Like, your charge rate, even though most of the charging is happening at home, the supercharger network, the faster it is, the more it enables you to drive longer distances and enable road trips and things like that, which have been the disadvantage of EVs over gas-powered cars. And now they're really closing the gap with the supercharger V3 almost completely, I have to say. And not having that on your two higher-end version of your vehicle on your lineup, Model S and X, and having it on the lower-end version of the entry-level car in your lineup, the Model 3, doesn't make any sense. So the idea is that there's an upgrade coming to Model S and X, and this week we had a report on it that, well, we did talk about it last week or the week before that, not sure when, about the motor upgrade. So we already knew that permanent magnet reluctance motors that Tesla introduced in Model 3 are making their way to Model S and X based on our sources. And now this week, we learned that the actual hardware upgrade on the Model S and X is much wider than just the drivetrain. The entire powertrain is going to be updated. And from what we learned, and again, We're pretty confident about our sources, but it is based on the Tesla development software that our sources have been able to see. And based on that development software, Tesla is working on a similar battery architecture based on the 2170 cells that you find that we found in the Model 3 on Model S and X cars. So Tesla adapted that BMS basically for Model S and X. So that means that Tesla has development car development Model S and X vehicle working on the 2170 architecture. Of course, now, what does that mean for... it means that theoretically, Tesla should be able to bring the same charge rate of Model 3 to Model S and X with the new architecture. And
if not faster.
Come again?
I mean, bigger. If not faster, we have bigger battery packs, so theoretically it could charge faster.
Yeah, on a kilowatt basis, it might be even faster. Yeah, you're right. On a per mile, a mile per hour basis, maybe not, because the Model 3 is most likely going to remain more efficient than Model S and X even after that upgrade. But yeah, that's a real possibility. Very interesting, really. Now, it will also mean, like you said, a bigger battery pack. We don't know what kind of battery pack our sources have been trying to go through the BMS, trying to understand what kind of battery pack Tesla could have managed to build with the 2070, because, of course, that's what people want to know. Tesla should theoretically be able to go over the 100 kilowatt hour, which is the limit right now. There was a theoretical limit that Elon mentioned before for the Model S and X. I think it was 120. Or something like that. And I think it would make sense. Like, nothing, like, can you go very much bigger than 120 for Model S and X?
I've never gone beyond that.
Would you need more than 120? You know?
I mean, I don't know. Like, somebody always wants more.
Yeah.
But in reality, not really.
I mean, the Roadster is supposedly 300 kilowatt hour battery pack. So,
right.
but you have a compromise with that. So Tesla,
I feel like that's more for the powering the, you know,
exactly.
So you have more power for the motors rather than distance. That's just kind of a side effect.
Yeah, exactly. They need the higher energy capacity to have also more power. And there's a compromise with that for the Roadster. They had to stack two battery pack on top of each other. So you have two rows of 2170 cells, and that also compromising the interior of the car, which is not that big of a deal for a sport car, but for a Model S and X, where the cargo space inside the car is still very important, that could cause a problem. But just maintaining that just one row of one level of cells, switching to 2170, which is a bigger cell, will likely result in a bigger battery pack. If I had to speculate, I'd say something close to 120 would make a lot of sense. And that would differentiate the Model S batch pack more from the Model 3. Well, also for the Model X, but Model X doesn't matter as much. Well, eventually for the Model Y, because that new battery pack architecture should last Tesla for a long time. So maybe Tesla is looking into already looking into differentiating the Model X with the Model Y. What do you think about that, Ted?
That would be interesting. I mean, they certainly need to, because the Model Y is 95% of what the Model X is. So to charge those kind of premiums, you got to have some big differentiations. I wanted to go back to what you said about the cells. You know, as you put in the post, Elon Musk said in 2017, which, you know, they certainly were thinking about this car back then, these cars, the new, you know, upgrades. He said there's no plans to change cell form factor for the X and S to the 2170s.
Mm-hmm. No plans.
No plans in basically a year ago or a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
That seems fishy, because in addition to that, and in addition to your sources, I believe, I can't remember if it was a conference call or what, but somebody asked Elon or Tesla about when the 2170s got put into the battery packs, whether they would change the form factor of the Model S and the Model X. And at the time, they said that they were able to change the battery packs enough that the actual form factor wouldn't matter. Or wouldn't change materially. I can't remember what that was for specifically.
I think you're referring to the module. They had the new module that could fit the size of a Model S and S battery pack with 2170 cells, something like that.
Right. So, I mean, you know, with the same modules, you know, they were talking about raising the floor or lowering it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think... So at that time, it was kind of a foregone conclusion that the Model S and X were going to get the 2170 cells. Mm-hmm. But there's this tweet from mid-2017, Elon Musk is saying, no plans to change cell form factor for the X and S.
Yeah. Well, I think the key word is that there's no plan. Like, that means right now they have no plans to do it, which might have been true at the time. But, of course, what we were seeing right now with the Supercharger V3, if they announce something like that, it kills the cells. It's what do you call it? The Osborne effect, I think? Osborne effect,
right,
yeah.
Right,
when you announce a new product, your existing product going to suffer in cells. It makes sense.
Right.
Probably that's what he was trying to avoid back then. To if he was even going to mention that he wasn't going to upgrade the cells on the Model S and X, it would have killed the sales of those very popular cars at the time, because the Model 3 was just starting in thermal production, or not even, was right about that time, really. So they still needed a lot of Model S and X cells, which they don't do as much right now. Not that they are confirming the news. They didn't want to comment on a report earlier this week or the one last week. But I don't think our report is affecting Tesla, because that's what we get from Tesla fans. We do scoops like that. Tesla fans go after us and like, hey, what are you doing? You cannot reveal those things. You're killing Tesla sales if you do that. And I mean, I think the bigger impact on Tesla sales with the V3 announcement wasn't our fault. So I don't want.
Yeah, the sales had declined way before we had said anything.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that Tesla themselves, they shot themselves in the foot when they did the Supercharger V3 announcement without the Model S and X being ready for it.
Right.
Which I think they did because they needed the Model 3 cells that would come with announcing the Supercharger V3. Because they also, if you look back in the announcement where Tesla was saying, now that we are announcing V3, the new V3 stations are going to be coming up fast. And it's already like over a month later, and there's like, I think, two Supercharger V3 stations right now, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe three max. So I think that announcement might have been a little bit earlier than they would have preferred it, but they needed it for Model 3 cells, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Now,
and I think... Also, I think the Model X and S refresh, which we anticipate is a few months away, before that we'll see some constrained inventory on the Model S and X, just generally speaking. I think when the Hardware 2 came out, we saw some constraints and there was some weirdness with inventory. And I think, you know, we're getting kind of close to that point where it's going to shift over. So I anticipate, you know, around May or June or July, there's going to be some inventory weirdness with the Model S and X, and then it's going to flip over to the new.
Well, that's actually something that the people are speculating right now, that the drop in sales of Model S and X wouldn't be only because of a drop in demand, but a drop in production, that Tesla is limiting production.
That's true, and they're offering fewer models.
Yeah, they did do that. They did kill a few versions of the Model S and X over the last few months, so that's something to take into account for sure. Yeah, everything points to that, so it's not only our source, like Tesla itself, like everything's pointing to that. It's more about when exactly, and in terms of our sources, since again, it's mostly based on the software itself, so we don't know exactly when it's coming, but we have some indication that it might be coming as soon as June. And if you remember our report from last year about the Model S and X interior refresh, that was supposed to come in early Q3. Early Q3 means July. So June, July, it's pretty close. So those it would be weird if Tesla released a massive Model S and X hardware upgrade, then a design refresh right after. It would be kind of weird because some people that are going to order the car from the hardware refresh are going to from the hardware upgrade are going to be pissed when the interior refresh comes just a few weeks later. So
I think that happened last time, right?
Maybe not as
close
as that.
There were a few people who got the new fascia, but the old hardware won. I think MKBHD is one of those people.
The fascia? Because the fascia was April 2016. I think there was a new battery pack coming before that. You're right, but I'm not sure if it's that close to that. The 100
kilowatt. But the Hardware 2 came out right like a couple weeks after the fascia came out.
I feel like the Hardware 2, Autopilot Hardware 2 was October 2016. I might be wrong about that. I think you're more. I think it was like a battery pack upgrade not long before the front fascia upgrade. Anyway, my point is, Tesla is going to most likely combine those. But then if you do that, you make Elon Musk lie, because Elon has always been saying that there's no, Tesla doesn't do refreshes. They just, every time they have a little improvement, they just put it inside put it into production, basically. And you could easily call that thing a refresh if it involves new drivetrains, new battery packs, new charging capability. Speaking of charging capability, there's in the code, there's also some indication that Tesla converted the CCS protocol that is on the Model 3 for the Model S and X. Now, whether that means that it's only for Europe, like it is for the Model 3, or it's also for the North American market, that's still to be seen. But that would be interesting.
Yeah, and it also means that they probably are going to redesign the rear charging port, because the charging port as it stands can't fit a CCS combo adapter.
It's too small.
And right now they have actually this weird thing in China with a Tesla adapter and a Chinese standard adapter that's looks like a gas cap kind of thing.
Yeah, you mean there's basically two charge ports in China. There's the regular one inside the taillight and another one. That doesn't sound like an ideal solution. They need something else for that, which would make sense to be included in a refresh, but there's no refresh. Refresh doesn't exist at Tesla.
Doesn't exist.
No.
But if there was such a thing, that's the thing that they would do.
Yep. Okay, so there is that. So now, still on the refresh, there's something, and we put the post in the article for the podcast, in the podcast post here. Tesla Gigafactory one battery cell production is still limited to 23 gigawatt hour season in mass. So Elon went on like a little tweet storm this weekend, and it was in response to another post that we had last week about the reports that they're limiting investment in Gigafactory around the number of battery cell production. So there's sometimes disagreement between Tesla and Panasonic, apparently, at the Gigafactory 1. But Elon commented on that, and he confirmed that the 35 gigawatt hour of battery cell production capacity at Gigafactory 1, which we thought that Tesla and, well, actually more Panasonic, achieved late last year, what it is actually is just that they put the investment to have a capacity of 35 gigawatt hour, but Elon said that that's just a theoretical capacity. The actual max output is 2/3 of that, so about 23 gigawatt hour of a battery cell. And on top of it, he says that it means that Model 3 is still battery cell limited. So they still need more battery cell to increase Model 3 production. So I thought it was important to mention that, because in the context of Tesla apparently bringing the 2170 battery cell and battery pack architecture to Model S and X, and apparently Gigafactory 1 only being the only manufacturing plant that produces them for Tesla. Not that they are the only one with that format of battery cell, but of course Tesla also has its own chemistry that they developed with Panasonic, and it's produced at Gigafactory 1. So with that limitation, then, does it really make sense now to bring Model S and X? It definitely makes sense to bring Model S and X in terms of capabilities. The new battery cells to the vehicles just to match the capabilities on the Model 3 now. But in terms of production, looks like they may be creating another bottleneck there.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't think Panasonic is making those 2170s anywhere else, at least not with Tesla's chemistry and everything. They're not making them in Japan or China or anything like that, as far as I know. I know that. And the Powerwall stuff is all 18650s.
No, apparently 2170, apparently.
Oh, and the new Powerwalls?
Yeah. That's what Elon is saying. He's saying that because they're using the same cells, it's also limiting the output at the Gigafactory.
Oh, that makes sense, because nobody's getting Powerwalls.
Yeah. No, you're getting some.
Yep, eventually. 3 months, 2 months, mm-hmm. maybe.
All right. So... that's the bulk of it for the Model S and X refresh. That's what we know so far, which I think is as in-depth as you can at this point, but it should clarify itself in the next few months as we get closer to the release date, which, again, we think should be around June. So let us know what you think about that, and if, depending on the price point, if something that you would be into, like, especially for our listener, our listeners, we're currently Model S and X owners, if it's something that would make you upgrade your car. In terms of Tesla's side, Tesla, apparently, from what I hear from my sources, they are looking at that Model S and X upgrade, making those car again competitive in their own segment. Even though I would argue that they already are very much competitive on their current, but they are becoming a little bit stale after being virtually the same for the last 4 years or so. 3 years, maybe. They want the cars to get such a big boost that they are become the segment leader everywhere in terms of sales. So they want to kill the Mercedes S-Class. They want to kill the Cayenne for the Model X and GLC or whatever other SUVs that you have in the premium segment. So apparently that's the mission for the Model S and X program right now. Which, because, of course, they were there at one point. They were leaders in their segments in terms of sales. And then Model 3 came, and Model 3 became a killer in their segment and the premium cars in general. But Model S and X have fallen down the top list now. So you're trying to get back up there with that upgrade.
Yeah, and the difference between the Model S and the Model 3 in terms of size is, you know, it's significant. But like a lot of people who bought the Model S were really, you know, present company included, were really better suited to be Model 3 customers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a... And we said this before, that's a huge reason for the drop-off in demand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair.
And that's a good thing. Like, you know, you want to be cannibalizing your own products, not let somebody else do that.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Jobs said it best.
Yeah, that's a quote from Steve Jobs?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. We'll move on to the investor autonomy event that Tesla is holding on Monday. The live feed is already being prepped by Tesla and everything. We have the link and everything, so at least a presentation would be streamed, but there's also going to be something just for investors, I think, at the event itself in Fremont. So let's go in a little bit on what we expect will be unveiled there. Well, Tesla already said that it's going to be test drive and a presentation about the Autopilot software, the current version, the features that are coming, and what the new full self-driving computer is going to enable in terms of full self-driving capabilities. So that's what Tesla is saying. There's been a car spotted, a Model 3 spotted, with all the equipment to film, apparently what was described as a self-driving demonstration, which Tesla already said it's going to do. So we expect some kind of video that's going to come out of that, similar to what Tesla did back in 2016, if you remember, when they unveiled that Autopilot 2.0 hardware. They did that demonstration, which now almost 3 years later is still the only actual full self-driving mileage that Tesla did under its permit to test a full self-driving car in California. I don't know if you remember that, but it's actually a big deal, especially in the Tesla short community, because that's how they used to frame Tesla as not being a leader in autonomous driving, because all those other companies like Google is Waymo now, Waymo, even Apple and everything are now just putting a lot of mileage on public road in California, where they do allow you to test full self-driving vehicles under a certain limitation if you get a permit. But if you do that, you have to report all your mileage to the DMV, and you have to make an end of the year report that includes things like disengagement when the test driver has to intervene and take over the vehicle and whatnot. And when they do that every year, Tesla's just in the last few years, they keep reporting, we haven't done anything. So they keep claiming that they're coming up with a self-driving car, but at the same time, they're not even testing a self-driving car in their home state where all their engineers developing it are located. So it's like, what does that mean, everything? Of course, when that comes up, Tesla's response is always that they do test somewhere else, apparently. They're not being very open about that. And they do say that most of the testing is over shadow mode when on Tesla fleet vehicles that consumer owns. They run the software in the background, they say. But then there's been some controversy on that front too, in terms of what kind of capability really does Shadow Mode has. But if we used to compare it, so if we do expect a similar video as the one unveiled in 2016, but with maybe a little bit more impressive capability. Though the video was quite impressive. Do you remember that video set?
Yeah, I remember the steering wheel spinning around. Mm-hmm. By the way, did you look at the pictures of the that the guy posted? It looks like the Grim Reaper is driving. Is that supposed to be?
No, it was blacked out. It was blacked out. They didn't want to show the face of the driver, which is fair.
Okay.
Set us straight.
Well, I thought it would be like it's like a green screen, like where they were gonna have like no, they were gonna.
You still required to have someone there, so I think just like the last one too. They had someone there. It was just when you see the spin, the wheel was spinning.
Yeah,
there was still someone.
Hands on the lap.
They just had their hands on the lap. But there was a similar like setup with the video, and like there was also a camera over the car since you can see through the car with the full glass roof of the Model 3, and. Yeah, so there's that. But then if you go back and look at how Tesla made the last video, if you look at the mileage that Tesla produced to make that, I don't remember how long it was, the video, maybe like 5 minutes or something, like maybe a little bit longer than that. Because they did release an unedited version to show like we did that route completely self-driving. But they had to do the route, and I don't know, I don't remember how many times, but a bunch of times before they got it right, which is, of course, not how a self-driving vehicle should work. You don't have more than one try to make it work when you're a consumer product. All I'm saying is that we need to take it with a grain of salt. Unless Tesla do some kind of live demonstration, that would be nice. But if it's some kind of recorded thing, then we're going to have to wait almost a year until we get the DMV report to see what Tesla did to produce that video, because we're gonna have access to the mileage, because Tesla's gonna have to report the mileage as a self-driving test to the DMV. Nonetheless, I know it sounds like we're very skeptical, and I think it's healthy to be skeptical on the autopilot front, because of course Tesla has been very late with basically in every aspect of it. I mean, do you remember the coast-to-coast trip set?
Yep, going to happen 2017, right?
Yeah, by the end of 2017, 2018? Then 2018, now we're 2019, so who knows. But we should get some very interesting demonstration of the capabilities of the hardware 3.0, because Tesla has been making some very big claims on that, like being the most powerful computers inside the vehicle yet, and things like that. So get more details on actually what it is, other than the vague stuff that we got, like that it is a neural net accelerator and things like that. If we can get some more meat, more color on that, that would be very much appreciated. So we do expect that, because I think Pete Bannon, the man in charge of Autopilot Hardware, yeah, he's going to be speaking there. There's also Stuart Bowers, the VP of Engineering, which is in charge of all the software for Autopilot, is going to be speaking. And Andrew Carperty, which is, of course, the AI expert that's behind the computer vision system of the Autopilot, is also going to be at the event. So definitely, there's definitely going to be some very impressive stuff to be shown there. And of course, the goal is to convince people of what Elon has been saying for a while now, that full self-driving is coming to Tesla's fleet by the end of the year.
Yeah, I think the overriding goal is to convince people, and investors in particular, that there's this new thing right on the horizon that is, you know, the new hardware, the new software is going to really produce autonomous driving this time. And it's coming soon, and you know, you should get your money out, because it's going to be a big deal.
I want to mention this too. Uh-huh. The full self-driving package is going to increase in price a week after the event. So basically, they're going to show, that's a great thing that you can buy right now. Technically, if you order a car, you can buy it right now. Or if you're a current owner, you can order it over the air right now and do it by the end of the week. Otherwise, the price is going to go up. So, of course, it's also a way to get more money for Tesla in the short term because it's a demand lever that they're going to pull.
Yeah. So I don't have – I have it on my Model X, but I don't have – well, I don't have full self-driving. But
you don't even have autopilot on Model 3, right?
Right. So I don't have – I have autopilot on my Model X, but it's a lease and it goes back next year. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, for full self-driving. But the Model 3, which I was planning on probably selling and getting an all-wheel drive models or Model Y or something anyway,
mm-hmm.
I don't have anything on that. And I'm waiting to see if I'm convinced to get full self-driving because, you know, of all those factors. And, you know, I basically drive the Model 3, like, mostly just around town. You know, we take the Model X on trips, so... I don't know if I'm going to get, I don't know if I'm going to be in that group, but it'll be interesting to see. And, you know, also if Tesla's listening out there, I am in San Jose right now. We haven't gotten an invite yet, to this thing. And we know a bunch of YouTubers and non-analysts that are going. So,
and you are a shareholder, you are an investor.
Not at the moment.
No.
I was going to buy some shares, but I didn't.
No. Okay.
So I am out of Tesla at the moment, but
I'm in. So if I get an invite as an investor, I can transfer it to you. So
okay. Well, I mean, I'm willing to buy a share.
That's what I told you to do. I told you just buy one share if you.
I was going to buy a few, and then it didn't hit my limit price. So.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So I'm not a shareholder. Not that it matters. I don't think to Tesla. I think Tesla may not be happy with our recent reporting. Not that we're inaccurate, but we may be stealing some of their thunder, and that's never a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we won't get an invite.
Yeah. Still, I think we can get a good report on it without being there, even though we do appreciate the invite when it comes. I think... I'm keeping my mind open, even though I've been disappointed about some of the progress. I love the autopilot, like the current version. I use it all the time. I love it on my Model 3. And they did get, so people always say I'm super skeptical about autopilot. I did buy the full self-driving package, so I cannot be that skeptical if I was willing to put, I did buy it when they did the discount thing. So I bought it for like $3,000 or something. So I cannot be that skeptical, in fact, actually putting my money on it. So I'm approaching the autonomy event with an open mind, and I'm just trying to convince me. Go ahead, because I think that's what the event is for. And last thing I want to say about the event, because it's an investor event, I am thinking that maybe they are setting up to do a capital raise, just maybe.
That would actually make a lot of sense because mm-hmm. I didn't really get why you invite analysts when, of course, you know, the stock price is important, but like you want to sell this to consumers, you invite media first and then, you know, maybe some investors.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that analysts are coming out means that some sort of investor tool or lever is likely to be pulled mm-hmm. or pushed. So
you don't think necessarily capital raise, maybe just like... trying to credit line or something like that?
I don't know. I mean...
I think it's a capital raise. Here's why.
Okay.
If you can convince... Because there's a ton of analysts right now, a ton of investors looking at self-driving. I mean, who is it? Is it Toyota and SoftBank just plowed $1 billion in Uber, especially for the self-driving capabilities?
Right.
Even though they not on top of the list of many people on that front. And a ton of money going into it. If Tesla can really prove, and I'm not saying that they're going to do it, but they're going to try to really prove that they are the leader in self-driving and they are the one that's going to be able to deliver a full self-driving system by the end of the year based on their computer vision system, then it's an easy sell for investors and the money's going to be coming in fast. I mean, $1 billion easy that they're going to raise a capital raise. And I've been trying to, I know that Elon has been saying that there's not going to be any, not even right now, there's not any capital raise. I think he's pretty much said that doesn't want Tesla to raise any more money, any more equity at least. And I've been trying to convince people to maybe try to change his mind on that front, because we've seen Tesla having some hard times in the past quarter, and investors took a hit on the public market for sure, but I think that consumers have taken a few hits with it, with all the price drops and everything that affected the value of the cars. I think employees have taken a bit hit because there's been some waves of layoffs and everything. So with Elon saying we're not going any capital raise, so what's the goal of that? Not doing capital raise? The only downside of it is that you're diluting your share. So for existing investor, you're getting some dilution. And of course, who's the biggest investor? It's Elon Musk himself. So I think it might be a little bit, it looks selfish a little bit that he's unwilling to do a capital raise, because it would definitely dilute his 22% shares of the company or something like that. And other investors also might not be that much into it. But I think the average individual investor, the retail investor, would be willing to see Tesla do a capital raise if it means accelerating their plan, because I think most retail investors are there for the long term and for seeing Tesla grow faster. And a capital raise would help that, I would think.
Just real quick, do you think Elon's a little concerned about his voting power? If he dilutes shares any further, he loses some voting power, unless he pulls like a Facebook where they sell non-voting shares?
Yeah, I don't think that would pass, but it might be, and I'm not in his head, but I mean, when you, it's pretty rare these days you have a founder of a giant $50 billion company that still holds 22% of the shares. That's extremely powerful. So more power to him for that, for managing to do that, because can be easy. That plus the fact that he's very influential with a lot of other investors that have significant shares, very influential on the board. Of course, the other big shareholders have reduced a little bit their stake in the company over the last quarter. I think Woody just reported, was it Bobby Gifford? Bobby Gifford or the other one. There's two huge investment firms that own a lot of Tesla, and they reduced their stake a little bit. So depending on what kind of influence Elon has on them, if they trust him or not, if that's the case, then I think he's safe. But and he has most of the retail investor behind him too, like people that hold Tesla share, they are mostly Elon fans. So I think he's safe on that front, but maybe he's worried about it, and that's why he's not willing to dilute his stake any further. I don't know.
Yeah. We should move on. We're starting to get a little bit low on time.
Oh, yeah. We're 40 minutes in already. Yeah. Real quick, we're going to touch about the new impact report that Tesla released this week. So it's the first report of its kind where Tesla reports like a 48-page report about the impact of its products and its business operation on the environment and other impacts in general. And it's pretty interesting stuff. They claim to have prevented 4 billion tons of CO2 to be released in the atmosphere, which is pretty impressive. A few interesting things. Well, things that 550,000 cars, which I think we already knew. That's not new. One thing that's interesting.
I thought it was kind of interesting that they've generated close to three times more solar energy than the cars have consumed, or you know, Model S, X, and 3. Obviously, Roadster has a little bit as well, but still, like, way more solar energy going into the grid than Model S and X taking out of the grid.
Yeah, that was really, really interesting, and it just shows you like the closed loop that Tesla, that has been Tesla's mission for a long time now. That the energy consumption is one part of the equation, and that's the car. So find a different way to consume energy for transportation. So that's battery electric instead of being fossil fuel based, and then make that energy consumption with clean energy generation. And that's, of course, solar through SolarCity, which is not Tesla Energy. And yeah, so what you're talking about three times the value, it's 5.26. Is that terawatts? Oh yeah, terawatts hours of energy versus 13.2 for the solar generation. So there you have it. Of course, I think Model 3 might be growing so fast now that it might catch up, right?
The solar is not growing so fast.
Exactly, anymore. So it might catch up.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Next year.
Then Tesla goes into where their own energy consumption coming from for the operation side of the thing, which is pretty interesting. Like supercharger network, which was responsible for 64,000 metric tons of CO2. So that's something that they need to address. And of course, they're starting to do it with like the Kettleman City supercharger, which is powered by solar, and they have a few other effort on that front. So they're gonna try to fix that. But of course, their facilities, so the factories and everything, what was the biggest direct contributor to emissions for on their operation fronts, 146,000 metric tons of CO2 from their factories and facilities. Yeah, you can see the full report. It's on Electric right now. Very interesting stuff. I think the most interesting thing that came out of it, though, was the battery recycling comment that they made. Tesla said that it is developing a unique battery recycling system. They said that right now they don't have that many battery pack coming back to them. Of course, we already reported on the fact that Tesla's battery capacity degradation is not significant. So that's good. I mean, the pack are going to last long. And what it does mean though is that there's not many pack coming back right now because Tesla vehicles are just not that old. The packs that are coming back though, they're coming back from mainly R&D, manufacturing, quality control, stuff like that. And Tesla is sending them to third party recyclers. But eventually they plan to do that themselves, and they said that they are going to do that by at Gigafactory 1, Tesla is developing a unique battery recycling system that would process both battery manufacturing scrap and end-of-the-life batteries. Through this system, the recovery of critical materials such as lithium and cobalt will be maximized, along with the recovery of all metals used in the battery cells, such as copper, aluminum, and steel. All these materials will be recovered and farm-optimized to new battery production. So, if you're familiar with recycling, it's not that easy of a business, depending on the material. And if you're coming back with the battery cells that is depleted, to turn that into materials that you can reuse is not that easy. So what Tesla is talking about is developing a system that's going to be able to optimize the amount of material that's going to be recycled so they can be used again. And that's extremely important for the future of electric vehicles because, of course, we want battery electric vehicles for their impact on the environment. And something that detractors have been saying for a while is that mining the minerals of batteries is just as bad as burning the fossil fuels, which is, of course, not true by itself. But on top of it, once you burn fossil fuels, it's done. It's releasing the atmosphere. And, of course, there's all that CO2... what do you call it? The CO2 capturing?
Recapture.
Yeah, recapturing thing. But that's still not quite there yet. And we don't know if it will ever be working in an efficient way because, of course, it takes energy in itself to capture the CO2 and whatnot. So that's another deal. But for the most part right now, if you're burning fossil fuel, it's in the atmosphere. It's there. It's done. For the battery, when the battery is done, you can recycle it. All the metal is very valuable. So much so that it's more valuable than that mining new material if you have an efficient system to recycle them. And that's what Tesla is talking about here. And they're talking about also recycling the actual scrap from the battery manufacturing because you do get scrap from it. There's been a little report from that the Gigafactory 1 from insiders and leakers that say, oh, there's a ton of scrap that Tesla's producing at the Gigafactory 1, which is true, but Gigafactory 1 is also
the Martin Tripp stuff.
Yeah, the Martin Tripp stuff. Tesla's also producing like 23 gigawatt hour of battery cells there. So, of course, it's going to produce a lot of scrap. But they can reuse that scrap for new battery manufacturing, which is great.
Yeah, I'm sure the battery chemistry will change a little bit, but it'll probably just contain the stuff that most of the stuff that's already being used. You mentioned J.B. Straubel, the CTO of Tesla, mm-hmm. started a material recycling startup. I wonder if the current third-party recycling is actually him, and they're going to just bring him in inside at some point in the future.
Yeah, that's a weird one. I've been trying to find more info on this, and it's very hard to get any kind of details. Tesla is not commenting on it, which would indicate me that, because if it hadn't anything to do with Tesla, I think they would just say it. And if they're not saying it, then
I've actually heard that JB's not in the building that often anymore these days. I don't know if it's a sabbatical or if he's doing this other thing or if whatever is going on. But it would
be a bummer because I think JB is essential to Tesla's success.
He seems like a
I don't want to say essential, but he was essential at some point to Tesla's success, and he has been a big contributor to Tesla's success, I think.
Yeah, and he's one of the founders and mm-hmm. in name. So that's pretty cool. All right, moving on to non-Tesla stuff. I was going to say we're moving on to non-Tesla stuff, but Canada's $5,000 Canadian EV incentive starts next month. But does it not include Tesla?
It doesn't so far. Tesla told me that they are looking into it, but they were told that it's final. So I don't know what can be done at this point unless Tesla changes a few things quite radically on their side. But the good news is that plenty of cars are going to be eligible. We posted the list on Electrek. So the Hyundai Ioniq is going to be cheap in Quebec with that, if you wanted a cheap car.
Or even the Kona. It's not bad.
Kona's going to be... I don't even know how the Kona is on that list. Like that's the thing, though, why we mentioned Tesla here, because I feel like Tesla could have been included. We're only talking about Model 3 here. Forget about Model S and X. Because the limit is $45,000. And what they're saying is your MSRP needs to be below $45,000. And you can add option on that, but it cannot be more than $55,000.
Well, they tried something like that in Germany and kind of Tesla came back around.
Yeah, worked around it by reducing the MSRP, but unbundling a bunch of features that were standard and making options. So we think Tesla could be that. But then I go on the Chevy Bolt, the Chevy Chevrolet website in Quebec, and the MSRP of the Bolt EV is listed at $46,945 Canadian, so that's over $45,000. So it makes no sense that they are accepted. But then, if you look into the details, they have to advertise the MSRP with a bunch of destination fees and things like that, which are pretty high for the Bolt EV.
Hmm.
So they advertise the MSRP over $45,000, but they don't have to include that in the government thing. So the actual price that the government is looking at is below 45. So then the Bolt EV was accepted. So the Bolt EV, you can put the $5,000 on it. So that's great for Canadian markets, especially in Quebec where you have the $8,000 on top of it. So that's $13,000 that you save off the car. It's starting to be a decent deal. But I'm thinking but Tesla wasn't able to get that similar of a deal, even though, and that's where things get murky, because the Model 3 is also has an MSRP of $47,000. If the base Model 3 standard range is still available, which of course it's not on the website, it looks bad for Tesla if they're trying to make a deal with the government. They cannot go, hey, we also have a $47,000 car with destination fee or whatnot. So
wait.
But it's not on the website. It's off the
menu. Is there any chance that Tesla released their Model 3 standard range when they did to try to get in under the Canadian $5,000 tax credit?
But they because weren't. It like it was the thing. It was $47,000 at that point.
But it seemed very premature, the announcement, and then, of course, they kind of pulled it back and the car never really exists. But I wonder if the fact that they released it so prematurely, I wonder if that had anything to do with them trying to get in under the, backdoor deals with the Canadian government. I wonder if that had anything mm-hmm. to do with it.
That would be interesting.
Yep.
I hope that they are working on it now, because I think it would. I don't think it makes sense. I've already given my piece on it on the price limit on cars. I know it looks bad because you're giving money to people that can afford a car of that, but actually not. Not for a Model 3. I don't think it means that because people are going over the budget to buy a Model 3 because it is a great electric car and for what it represents and everything. But anyway, we won't get too much into that. We already talked a lot about those price limits thing on that.
So VW introduced a new all-electric SUV.
ID which, Rooms. How do you like the name set? ID Rooms. I
don't like it at all.
Yeah.
Also, the doors look a little...
concept-y?
Strange. Yeah, concept-y. And, you know, they look actually a little bit Tesla-y when they when they're closed, but they open sliding doors
Because of the handle. No, the handle is at the front. Is it? Let me.
No, it's in the middle.
Oh yeah, no, anyway. Those are the lights. Okay, not the lights, the cameras that are replacing the rearview mirrors. Yeah, you're right. It's just like the handles are exactly like Model X.
Yeah.
Setup. But the hinges on the doors are not the same as the Model X. So.
Right. The hinges are even weirder when they open like a sliding glass door.
Which does make some sense in terms of you want to limit the area where the doors open so that you can
fit. Yeah, it's kind of like a minivan, I guess.
Yeah.
Front and back.
Just with both the front and the back seat doors. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the car that's been unveiled. It's the latest in the series of ID concept vehicles that VW is going to base. A bunch of new EVs are coming to market in the next few years on the MEB platform, the next generation electric vehicle platform that they are releasing. The hatchback, of course, is going to be the first of those cars that's going to be based on the ID concept. Then there's the ID Vision, then there's the ID Cross. The Vision is a sedan, the Cross is a crossover. There's a microbus, there's a buggy, there's everything. But now they have a full-size SUV, which is the ID Rooms on Villa di Shanghai Auto Show. A battery pack of 82 kilowatt hours for a range of 450 kilometers. That's WLTP. So, what, about 350 miles, probably?
Something like that.
Yeah, which is pretty good for 82 kilowatt battery pack, full-size SUV. Makes sense. 150 kilowatt charging. Good.
Good.
Decent. Decent, but decent for when? Because when is that car coming up? 2 years.
Right, it's basically e-tron-y, like
yeah, e-tron-y, but in 2021,
right?
Instead of 2019.
And man, like VW launches a lot of vehicles that are in 3 years, but never end up coming in 3 years. So, is this going to be another one of those? I hope not. Or it's going to be probably removed from the concept. It'll look totally different, and you know more. It'll blend in much more better. So I don't know. It's hard to get excited about these Volkswagen concepts because we know that they never really materialize.
Mm-hmm. I still think right, they're coming though, but
yeah, I hope they are. Yeah, like put them in the dealerships. I can't wait.
Yeah, they're coming. It's just we've been hearing some things about the MEB platform and possible delays in terms of reaching some price point because that's the thing. VW is definitely trying to bring those cars to market, there's no doubt, because they're investing billions of dollars in the factories to make it happen. But they're not Tesla. They're not doing the Tesla thing of ramping up and everything. They want to go in hard and producing in high volume right away. And to do that, you have to reach that price point that makes sense. And apparently, we have been hearing that they're having some issue with reaching that price point for the MEB platform. So that might have been why there's some delays.
I mean, it could be the battery because they don't have really a good battery supply chain.
Yeah, we've been hearing that. I didn't include that in the podcast this week, but we should have talked about it. We can mention it quickly because it is Volkswagen. It's Audi. Audi is part of Volkswagen. The e-tron, apparently, as they reduced the production capacity of the factory, it's being produced in Brussels, in Belgium. All the e-tron is being produced there. And they were... apparently, from internal document that L'Echo, the Belgian newspaper, has obtained, they were planning 55,000 units in 2019, which is quite significant. But it was reduced to 45,000 units recently due to limitation in battery supplies from LG. So you have that. Though I think,
like, and everybody's having that problem because all of a sudden everybody wants batteries, and LG and Samsung and a few others are the only ones that they have, and you know, once demand goes up, supply goes down and prices go up.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody who doesn't have problems with batteries is, well, maybe NIO. They got an all new electric sedan and fast charging station.
Yep.
This week.
It's a concept too.
Yep.
It's literally called the NIO ET preview. So would assume it's only a preview of a car concept. Looks pretty cool though. Looks sleek.
It's kind of the opposite of Tesla, where they started out with a SUV and they brought it down to the car form factor.
Yeah. Well, China does love its SUVs, so it makes sense to start with that. You're talking about the ES8, which has been somewhat successful so far. They already sold a few thousand units, maybe over like a few tens of thousands of units at this point. And they came out with the ES6, which is just a smaller SUV. And now the NIO ET preview is a sedan version that should come out next year, I think. Well, a production version of it's going to come out next year.
Yeah, and NIO's been kind of hinting at coming to the U.S., so that'll be exciting to see.
Or at least outside of China. Maybe I'm not sure they're going to come to the U.S. first. They might probably come to
maybe not first,
Europe
but
first.
But the fact that they're talking to us at all just means that they do care about
the
US market.
Since the beginning, they've been big on calling themselves a global brand instead of just because all the talk about Chinese companies, like how many Chinese EV startups there's on there, they want to differentiate themselves with having a lot of investment outside of China.
So yeah, and they also have a Formula E team, which is a global thing as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. So. Yeah, it makes sense to have global ambitions if you're doing global marketing with the Formula E. Another Chinese EV startup that unveiled something at the, well, also unveiled a sedan, an all-electric sedan, at the Shanghai Auto Show is XPeng. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right, but we've been calling XPeng a Tesla clone, which might seem harsh, but it is quite fair, I think, in this case, because the founder himself confirmed that the whole startup started when Tesla opened up the patents back in 2013, I want to say. And he was inspired by that. He said, "Hey, I can just use this as technology now, so let's do it. Let's start our own startup, our company." And they are backed by massive Chinese tech giants, and they have a ton of money. And they did also do the same thing as NIO. They released an SUV first. They already started deliveries. Apparently, it's being somewhat well received. And now they are following up with a sedan with, they claim, over 300 miles of range, but they were using the NEDC standard. So, based on the NEDC standard, they were seeing 600 kilometers of range, which is like almost 380 miles of range. So we say 300 miles of range because, of course, the NEDC standard is quite flawed. Cool looking car, also sleek like the NIO. Would be interesting to see that on the market. It should come in Q2 2020. They say that they already have over 3,000 orders for it after the first day of unveiling the car. Of course, they might have some issues with Tesla too, because they're being sued by Tesla right now, or at least an employee of XPeng is being sued because it was a former employee of Tesla, and Tesla claims that he stole the whole source code for Autopilot and brought it to XPeng. So we've been following that lawsuit. We'll tell you guys if anything comes out of it.
So Genesis has a new Mint, luxury electric city car concept.
Very much a concept, right?
Yeah, I like it though. It's cool. I like the rear doors that kind of they go up like Lamborghini doors a little bit.
But is it for a back? That's not for a back seat though, right?
That's for like the trunk, I think.
It's a trunk with, you have to open like two doors for the full trunk or something. That's
You know, one side you get the passenger side trunk and the driver's side trunk. Also, those the buttons on the dashboard are kind of funky as well. You guys, if you're not watching the or you should check out the website. It's a pretty cool gallery of images.
Yeah, and that was unveiled at the New York show too, not the Shanghai one. We should say,
right?
Genesis is kind of due to launch an electric vehicle for a while now. I mean, Hyundai has been doing some interesting stuff with the Ioniq and doing stuff with the Kona. Makes sense to bring that up market to their more luxury brand. And I do like some Genesis. I mean, they do some pretty cool cars. I want to see them do an electric one. I don't think there's any details on bringing that car to production, though. And again, it's just very much of a concept, so we don't expect anything close to that to be the first car to bring to market. All right, we're going to end, guys, on the Chevy Bolt EUV. That's something that's a trademark that GM just filed for. And, I mean, if you just based on the name, it does sound like an electric vehicle, like a different version of the Bolt EV, which is interesting.
Electric utility vehicle, we're assuming, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's the presumption right now. That means electric utility vehicle. And what's very interesting is that if you guys remember, like 2 weeks ago, something like that, we did a report on two missing GM electric vehicles because they did... 18 months ago, they did say that within 18 months, they're going to reveal two new electric car base of the Chevy Bolt EV. And we haven't seen those cars within those 18 months. So we did a report on that, saying, hey, where are those cars, GM? Want to see those cars? And GM did, well, to be fair, we did ask them first. They never responded to us. Or they said we were looking into it, or we gave them some chance.
Yeah. And they transferred us to a different person who never replied.
Yeah, exactly. And then I decided to post. And after posting, now they came back to us. And what's interesting in the context of that new trademark is that they claim in their response to our original report that they did launch two electric vehicles based on the Chevy Bolt EV. And those vehicles were the Velite, the Buick Velite, and what's the Bujong E200, which are two cars that have nothing to do with the Chevy Bolt EV, two cars that are only for the Chinese market, and two cars that are produced by joint ventures in China. So,
The Buick is like a little. It looks a little bit like something that Chevy would build. The other car is just like a wacko Chinese thing. But
maybe not wacko.
It's like a smart car.
Yeah, it's also a smart car. It's like cheap as hell though. Like you have to give them that like $10,000 or something. So
right, and the Buick looks a little bit like the what is it called, the Velite 6, looks a little bit like I guess it could be considered to be like something.
Well, you know the story on that. It was supposed to be a Volt. It was supposed to be like a Buick version of the Volt that they're going to sell in China only. And then I think the Volt powertrain system didn't match the regulation in China because what they want is that they want the credits to be able to sell their other cars. And it didn't match, so they decided to go electric or something like that. But it electric with a powertrain based on the Chinese joint venture, I think. So... anyway, that was GM, like, we got you. We did release those two cars based on the Chevy Bolt EV. But, of course, when they saw that, we're like, are you kidding? Like, you just pulled that out of your ass right now. This doesn't mean it's clearly not the two vehicles that you announced 18 months ago. And now they're filing a trademark for Bolt EUV, which sounds exactly what we were expecting. Different version of the Bolt EV with the same powertrain and everything, just a different form factor. And Seth, you did point out an interesting post that we had over a year ago when GM announced that they're going to release a self-driving version of the Bolt EV. And when they did the PowerPoint, that they said that they released an image of a CUV that we have never seen before. And under that image of the CUV, you can check on the electric right now, it says 2 and 3 by 2020, and they're talking about electric cars. So might be what we might be looking at the nerdy concept of that Bolt EUV there. So,
and it would be nice because that's something that people really want and GM really needs to put out. Mm-hmm. And frankly, it wouldn't be that much work for them. Like they've got the Bolt platform. Mm-hmm. They really just need to add a motor and jack it up a little bit, maybe some bigger tires. And I'm sure there's some more to it than that, but like, frankly, they need to do something. So,
and that image is pretty cool. Looks cool. Yeah,
it's a good size, good shape.
And before you pointed me to that image, what I was saying about it is that just from the name, electric utility vehicle, I was thinking something a little bit bigger than the Bolt EV, something with a shape that it's more SUV or crossover like, because I am of the opinion that at least under some angles, the Bolt EV looks like a compact car. Doesn't look like a crossover. Doesn't right. look like a SUV. Looks like a compact car that's actually pretty decent in size. So not in size, but the look of it, like an Econobox or something. That CUV that is in the picture looks actually quite aggressive. Looks a lot more like a CUV, but more compact. Hence the CUV. Or like a long crossover. I don't understand all those terms, like CUV, crossover, EUV now. Come on, like it's too many terms. All right, so that's pretty much it, unless you guys have some question for us. I didn't look at the feed while we were talking.
I think we went over a little bit already, so we'll have to answer them next time.
Yeah, we can look into it, and if not, you guys can hit me up on Twitter and whatnot. All right, thanks a lot for listening this week. I'm going to be back same time, same place. Next week. See you.